The views, opinions, and discussions expressed on this show are those of the host or guest, and not necessarily those of NMJC, its employees, or board of directors.
Good morning. Welcome. It's Lee County with Lindsay on a beautiful, and I say beautiful, August day. It's in the hundreds again. We're having another one of those heat wave stretches, which I'm actually not too upset about because I know I'm only going to have my summer for a little longer. But I do know that the moisture has helped. This is not the time and era of my life that I think the weather report is as important as the content. So we're going to buzz through to the fact that it is now August, and with me today to talk about one of the most important things we can ever talk about, which is our children, here in Lee County with Lindsay, talking about the important topics. And I'm just going to dive right into it. TJ Park, superintendent of the Hobbs Municipal Schools. Thank you so much for being here, because I've never thought of the Lee County with Lindsay show as being a hot seat, right? But I had Larry came in and talked to us from the JC a couple of weeks ago. Last week I had on some Lee County commissioners and fair and rodeo board members. It's still not a hot seat, because that's just not how I operate. However, there's nothing that I'm talking about with any of my guests, and probably least of all you today, that just doesn't have so much passion. It brings up so much emotion, yet it still has to be thought of with science and business perspective and psychology. I mean, it's limitless as to the effects of what we have to talk about these days, and especially when we're now talking about schools and Hobbs and what's happening. I'm going to kind of just give you the floor, and I know most parents probably know what the options are. But keeping in mind that some people out there who don't have kids actively in the school system may just really not know where we're at today. So I'm going to let you start with summarizing where Hobbs Schools is at, and really you talking about what's important to you in this conversation, because I can only imagine how many different layers there are.
Well, Lindsay, thanks. And I appreciate you letting me come on your show. And I'll just ramble for a bit. And then as I take a breath, just jump in there and let's do some clarification, because okay. I've talked to so many people and had so many meetings, and honest to Pete, if I never hear the word Zoom again, it would be a very happy day for me. But going back to March, mid-March, whenever we got the notice that we were going to shut down, I think the majority of us had the concept that this was going to be a short-lived endeavor, you know, that we would eventually finish out the year, work on it this summer and come to a new consensus. It'd look a little bit different, but not horribly. So I know a lot of parents and a lot of people out there think, well, gosh, they've had 5 months to plan and we should have a perfect plan laid in place. Part of our dilemma really is that once from March to May, we were trying to build the airplane while it was flying.
Right.
And so teachers were trying to teach. They were teaching. Mm-hmm. Students were trying to learn. And we were just trying to survive the year.
It was probably more like hour to hour.
I mean, getting emails, trying mm-hmm. to communicate, doing all of that stuff. So those couple of 2.5 months really don't count. What I hope people understand is once teachers go off a contract, they're not obligated to participate until they come back on contract.
Okay.
Now, we're very fortunate in Hobbs that whenever we throw trainings out there, we get a lot of participation. But we still have some that don't participate. So when we come back on contract on August the 3rd, I believe that it was, we've got to hit teachers pretty hard and heavy with trainings, because our world completely shifted. So we set a deadline at our central office on July 15th that we were going to have our plan ready to go, so we could tell our community, so they could kind of get ready, so they could be prepared. That was ahead of most school districts in the state. A lot of people held back. So we were ready for a hybrid model. I will tell you, my original TJ Parks plan, which probably is a good idea that we have an entire team and it's not just me. But my original plan was to offer two things, online learning and then full back.
Okay.
So
of people would have loved,
right,
the TJ Parks plan.
And 70% of our population chose to come back.
Okay.
So 70% of the people would have come back full bore, 5 days a week, everybody in school.
And is that a survey that you sent out
right,
you have that result?
Okay. We did two different surveys, mm-hmm. and they gave us the same exact results. An end of survey at the end of May and a survey at the end of June.
Okay.
Same exact results. So that's really what I wanted to do. we got some guidance from the State Department that said we were, you could go full back, which would be green. There would be a hybrid model, which would, you couldn't have all the kids back, or there would be a remote. And so we were given notice pretty early that no matter what, we would not start 100% back. Okay. So we worked on a hybrid model. I have a lot of consternations about a hybrid model because I think it puts a lot of work on our teachers. And I think once we do come back into a hybrid, you're going to see teachers that are really going to struggle because it's so difficult. Because they not only have the kids in front of them, but they have the kids at home that they're responsible for. And so they're teaching two groups. And so it's really tough. And then we've been told by medical providers that you really don't reduce your risk by splitting kids up. Mm. You're still, it's fewer numbers, right, but you're exposed to the same amount of risk. But that's just from some local medical providers that we talked mm-hmm. to.
To be surprised that there are differing opinions sure. in the medical community
this. I do want to talk about that a little bit. You know, I don't think it's anybody's fault right now because things change. The CDC guidelines change constantly.
Right.
Because what's happened is that this virus is so new that they don't have any long-standing data to say, if this happens, then that's going to happen. So they're giving it their best guess, mm-hmm. And that best guess can change tomorrow. And so we get an email or we get notification or we get a press conference and say, okay, this is the way we go. Everybody builds their plan and they get ready. And then a few days or hours even, it can change. And we've had that happen where I sent an email out to staff and said, this is what is going to happen, can happen. And there's a press conference that changes that, and you have to send a retraction, say, no, that changes. And I think for the most part, the Hobbs community has understood that and been sympathetic. But at some point in time, they're going to come to, you know, is TJ really crazy? You know, why are we changing so much with that? So,
although with social media, as with everything, this entire event happening in our world is so immediate response. So when you send out that email, I don't think it says top secret on it. You have teachers or people who say, this is the direction we're going, whether they're frustrated or whether they're just trying to inform, however, whatever. And then they literally are talking about their feelings about it when they watch the press conference and realize that it's changed. So even they know this isn't about what you are doing. And that's been said. Let's give you an opportunity to help us understand. The school doesn't have the ability to make your own choice, just like with anything else that we as the public are being told that's happening in most cases. The mandates, that's probably not the right word. You have a probably better word. You're being told by the state what your options are. Usually they aren't really options. And then you're told how you're going to do it. And then you have to enforce it. You really don't, your hands are somewhat tied to what you're being told, regardless of what we might like to do here in our own community.
The state of New Mexico is different than other states. And I've been really fortunate. And I've been on meetings all summer long with superintendents literally across the United States, from Washington to Florida, Vermont, Connecticut to California. And it's just amazing. Everybody is as frustrated as we are. Some are frustrated because there's no direction from their state.
I see.
Some are frustrated because the state is directing everything they do. And so everybody's just frustrated. It doesn't matter who's in charge or whatever.
It's a sign of the times.
You're just frustrated. Okay. So in the state of New Mexico right now, we are given directives and guidance on that. And so right now, everyone in the state of New Mexico has to open up remotely.
Okay.
You cannot open up face-to-face with that. Now, I think the problem that, and I'll just say that from my perspective that I have, and I think a lot of people have, is there's a lot of inconsistencies. Mm-hmm. I had a good conversation with the secretary actually on Friday afternoon, and I expressed my real concerns because they came out with the guidance and it said we could only open up remotely. Mm-hmm. So we could not have kids in our building for education. Yet they said we could offer a student child supervision for 1 to 5 for parents out there. So you can have kids in there. You can't teach them, but it's just an inconsistency part of that. So
it doesn't fit the narrative of why we were doing one thing.
Right.
If you can do something different that contradicts why you had to do the other thing, or is the contradiction to why you had to follow the other
thing. And I'm going to tell you, the reason that I spoke with the secretary was because I emailed him and said I had a real concern because of the inconsistencies. And he said, well, you're really fixing to get mad at me because I'm sending an email out tomorrow. Because what they originally said was you can bring back any kid, K through 12, a 1 to 5 ratio. So K through 3, and then from 4 through 12, you're at-risk kids. So kids who have fallen behind, trying to help them and so forth. So some districts were trying to bring some of those back. The following day, they sent a retraction to that, saying they had jumped the gun and not gotten permission from the Department of Health. And so now that plan has been pulled back. And I told him, I said, I'm going to be honest. I'm not upset with you because we didn't do that, because my fear was we've had so much influx and so many movement. We're not going to do anything until we can see some consistencies with that. So that's part of the frustration I think that superintendents have is trying to build. It's like trying to build a house on quicksand because it's moving so rapidly. And the gist of it really is nobody has been down this path before.
Right.
So even though I feel really good about the plan that we've got right now in Hobbs, we are finding out day to day things that are really just microcosms that say, gosh, we got to fix that. Grades, attendance. How do you take attendance on remote? There's lots of theories on that. Does a kid have to check in every day? If you're remote and you give a lesson and that kid finishes on Wednesday, does he really have to check in Thursday and Friday?
Right.
My belief right now is we're probably just going to ask them to check in just for a health and wellness benefit. Just
which we're
going to
talk
sure.
about in its own right. Yep. That is another huge concern here. Before we get off of it, I'll forget, and I'm going to jump around anyway, so I might as well just run with it. The interesting dynamic of what is happening with your young kids, your K through 3rd, I believe.
Right.
And then 4th through 12th is a different thing. And if you'll just explain that is a different scenario once the hybrid model gets put in place. It's all the same right this second, right? But once the it's really not a hybrid because there's so many different things happening that it's not a hybrid. To me means like two, and there is not just two things happening here. So help us understand what's different about that and why that's okay from those folks providing this guidance.
So even a step further back, and I know it's really confusing, and it's hard to explain. And so whenever it's hard to explain, you know it's confusing.
Right.
So we had the hybrid version, we have the online version, and you have the K through 3 version, okay. Right? So you really have three different plans out mm-hmm. there, which really makes it difficult. So
I don't even know how y'all function under one plan on a normal year, much less this, right?
Yeah. So the K through 3 version is they gave us leniency that we could bring back every kid that we could fit in a 6-foot radius or 6-foot social distancing in a room, and you had to measure your room and make sure that the room fit with them. And as long as you had staff and spacing, you could bring back all of your K through 3 kids. Your 4 elementary, we'll talk 4 and 4th and 5th grade, they can only come back in the true hybrid. So Monday, Tuesday, and then a different group on Thursday and Friday.
Same building.
So the K through 3 kids, you know, we've literally got them in music rooms. We will overtake the cafeteria. We'll take the library, and we're going to use some of those rooms. Now, the interesting part of this is as we were planning this, we did this before registration. We thought we knew how many kids were going to go online, but you never know until
absolutely.
You know.
Because the crunch time of these parents and these kids making this decision, most of them are so confused and so unsure that they're just going to wait it out till the almost very end.
Yeah. Right. And the reality is we're going to set some guidelines, but if a parent says, hey, this just didn't work for me, we're going to let them come back
right.
in.
Right. But so, you have to have something to go off right. of to get started.
So right now, we've got about 34% of our kids that chose to go completely online. So if you just take the 10,000 number, that's 3,400 kids. So we have 6,600 kids in our building. So we feel really good about the social distancing part of that. So that relieves a lot of the consternations. We may not have to use some of those extra rooms. And each elementary is different.
Right.
I mean, it was really... There's really some interesting populations, and you try to figure out psychologically, why did this group of people choose to, and why did this group of people choose to? And I'm not going to speculate as to why they did.
That research will be coming out for years
it,
to come,
it
right?
Will. There will be plenty of books written on this
about
year,
this
I can
right.
promise you.
So, in every realm, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, so the elementary, that's their aspect. The middle and high school become so complex, again, because you're taking... 50% of 66%, right? And then you've got to create half of those two different schedules with the plan that whenever they all come back together someday, you don't want to have to redo all of your
schedule. Never thought about the future, actually,
plus,
about getting back to normal, which
yeah.
is what we're all hoping and praying for.
So they create a schedule,
wow.
you know, with the thought that whenever they do come back, we've got to keep this same schedule so they'll all fit in the same classroom, and thinking, what happens if all of these online kids decide that's not what they want to do? Can we fit them back into the building?
Maybe back added back into the mix.
And so it's really been a scheduling, I'm not going to say a nightmare. I think it's been very interesting. I'll give a shout out to Renee Cantu, Assistant Superintendent for Data Processing, and his crew, because what they've done with the data that you don't think about on a day-to-day basis mm-hmm. has just been phenomenal, about splitting kids up into the two groups, helping principals figure out a schedule that will work, because it's like trying to do a Rubik's Cube blindfolded. It's just really, really difficult. So, you know, September 8th, we've been told that that's the date when elementary K through 5, pre-K through 5, can come back into our buildings.
Okay.
We're not given a date when middle and high school.
Oh, okay.
Originally,
the hybrid does not start yeah. necessarily at that time.
No. Originally,
oh.
it was said maybe 2 weeks stagger each,
okay.
but then that was retracted back, and they said we will have to look and see what the numbers tell us from that. So we don't know when or if the middle and high school are going to come back in that. Which, again, domino effects, because you have extracurricular activities that were going to be planned, just like, you know, the Big Ten and Pac-12
yesterday.
Yeah, I
was going to
say,
that's my next question that you
yeah.
kind of are bringing back. I know yeah. we had already been told by New Mexico High School Athletic Association back, in July, that fall contact sports were off the table.
Right.
They created a spring schedule for those. Again, you don't have any ability to waver within that. It has to be followed. And what contact sports is, I think is interesting. Is volleyball still happening?
Volleyball is, but it got pushed back because of us starting in a remote setting.
Oh, okay.
And so they probably, if I remember the schedule right, about the middle of October to the end of November, there will be no activities in December. December is
okay.
literally going to be a dead. There'd be no activities in December. Be careful with what I say.
These
on
days,
that.
Something means something different, which is not the case usually. Usually, we have lots of activities
right.
going on as it relates to basketball and
no holiday tournament this year.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah.
And the ramifications of all this remains to be seen. The changes are still going to be ongoing. If there's one thing that we know, is change is going to continue to
That's
be
right.
the constant of the day. When you start talking about, again, literally you're getting retractions, you're getting changes. Parents are reeling right now. I mean, I see it all over the social media. I feel it in talking to family members, this anxiety about what to do, what to choose. It may even be a moot point when it comes down to the August 28th, you don't know, or the September 8th, September 8th, is that the big
right.
day that you said? So, what is your advice? And real quick, we're talking 10,000 is a just rough number of students. How many teachers, faculty, staff?
600 teachers, 1,400 total staff.
Okay, so we're now talking 12,000 people that are all trying to dance, not to mention all the families
right.
that are then included into that. The parents who are stressing about, we work two jobs, we're not home all day. How do we help our kids now that have to be? I mean, what is your just, what do you tell people? Because I know you've been doing a lot of communication on Facebook and being able to try to answer as many questions as you can, you as well as the rest of your administrative staff. Is there anything that you feel is the bottom of, I got nothing but this? Is, do you got that even to give to help them feel like we're all in this together and that we none of us know what's happening, so it's all okay? Like, is that even a thing? Can you say that?
I do think we've done the best that we can. And whenever we allow kids to come back in and teachers to come back into the buildings, I'm 100% confident that it'll be in a safe environment. I hope I would never put anyone in an unsafe situation. I think the dilemma is it's difficult for me, and I read all the material. I see it on TV, you hear it on the radio, and it's so convoluted that mm-hmm. it's hard to tell what's real and what isn't real. You know, what are the numbers? But yet, whenever you have a conversation with someone who's lost someone to COVID, mm-hmm. it becomes very real, and you go, right. you know, you need to take a step back and say, you know, how serious is that? And I know people compare that to the flu and to all these mm-hmm. other things, but human beings just take into consideration. You go, well, if you can prevent one death, and there's just it's such a polarizing time in our United States, and I think people have politicized it. I hope people understand we are not political in the school system. I will not be political. We don't see R's and D's whenever those kids show up. I don't ask a teacher if they're an R or a D. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to do the best that we possibly can. But it's really difficult when it becomes so politicized
right.
with that. And a lot of people's belief, whether this is really a true pandemic or right. whether it's not, is a lot of it is based on their political beliefs.
Absolutely.
And so they start getting into those conversations, and it goes away from education, and it goes into those political beliefs, and it becomes very volatile
right.
and harmful. You know, I think people do and say things on social media that they would never say face to face. And we try to stay up with it on Hobbs Schools, and we have thrown out more information than I can ever imagine. Starla and Chelsea Wantland have just done a phenomenal job of getting that information out there.
Agreed.
But again, mm-hmm. we're throwing information as we get it.
Right.
And I think people get overloaded on that. And sometimes you just want to say, you know what, call me when you get it fixed.
That's right. We're just going to sit here and wait, and yeah. you let us know where we need to be and
yeah.
when. But you are, it's interesting because I do feel like there's definitely this initiative to empower, in a world where we are almost completely out of control in everything, to empower parents and students to make decisions the best they can with wherever those minuscule moments to make decisions are. One of the things that I think is it feels clear to me, I'll say that, is that no matter where you are, whether it's in a political realm, whether it's in a emotional realm, there is this notion that, especially as it relates to things like the schools, you ultimately get to choose for
right.
you and your family what you believe is best.
Right.
And I think that's a beautiful thing, because I'll admit I have opinions and they're very strong and I'm passionate about them. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I know, do I really have the right information that has helped me make these decisions?
Right.
Well, I think all that remains to be seen for most of us. But when we're talking even about you mentioned earlier, and I said, the health industry, the medical community doesn't agree in any way, shape, or form, which should be kind of the hub of all these decisions. When you talk about going back to school safely, and I watched a press conference today. I also watched some information about some schools who opened up in Georgia. Our ultimate goal, TJ, though, is not to have zero positive cases in the Hobbs schools when we actually have bodies in the facilities, is it? Because I almost felt like today watching something, and I won't get on that tangent because I don't think there's a right or wrong that you and I should have to answer for this, but there was actually some discussion that letting those kids go to school now had somehow backfired because there had some positives. can we live in a world right now where we expect zero positives when we're talking about 12,000 people trying to work in a realm that are going to have some kind of contact?
I think no matter what you do, you have to weigh the consequences that go along with life. There are statistics out there on deaths on driving. Is it worth me driving across town to go eat at a different restaurant, you know, and taking those chances?
Most of us say yes.
And again, I never want to compare this to anything else because people, once again, will blow that up. Mm-hmm. But at some point in time, you have to weigh the risks with the reward of that. Mm-hmm. The fear that we have right now in the educational sector is we know that there are tons of kids that are hurting right now. Abuse cases are not being reported because typically teachers are the ones that report the abuse cases.
I hadn't even thought about that.
And so if kids are allowed to stay with abusive parents or abusive adults, they will hide those kids. But when they show up to school with bruises or that they haven't been fed, that the teachers have a legal responsibility to report that. So we know that there's abuse cases that are happening. Personally, I think it's a moral abuse that we don't educate kids. You know, your high-income kids with really involved parents are going to survive no matter what because those parents are involved. But kids who come from parents or come from a situation that may not have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. It's not inherently built into their world.
No. Mm-hmm. And they are the ones that education is the leveling field for all of us. I grew up as a poor kid. I didn't know that whenever I was growing up. But as I look back, I think, dang, I was poor. But what got me out of that was an education, was an opportunity to improve myself. And had I gone through this system that we are right now, maybe I wouldn't get that opportunity. And maybe TJ Parks wouldn't be sitting in front of you today. And I think that's the fear, is that are we going to deny some kids the opportunity to break that poverty gap, that they don't better themselves, they don't help themselves, and then the abuse. And I'm going to tell you, the psychological impact that this is having on kids is just horrific.
And that's actually, that is... Scientists do agree. Right. Medical field agrees. Researchers agree that this is not good for the psychological welfare of young people. I mean, that I really haven't even heard another side to.
And I think that's where the argument is. Is it worth taking the risk of someone becoming positive tested for overcoming the abuse, overcoming the psychological, overcoming the lack of education? And people have to weigh that. And, you know, we had talked about this for just a second. You know, what are the choices of that? Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's going to be some really good things that will come from this. We're not going to see it for a couple of years because we're all going to reel on this and we're still going to debate it for a couple of years. But I think 5 to 10 years from now, education will look different than what it does today. And I think that's a great thing because people get tired of me saying this, but I quote Winston Churchill all the time. You never waste a good crisis. This has forced us to do some things that we wouldn't have done otherwise. Mm-hmm. We spent $6 million on technology at Hub Schools this summer, just on technology in and of itself. Another $1.5 million on sanitation devices. And so we've spent almost $8 million of improving our system, which is great. And I think what you're going to wind up seeing is you're going to see some kids who will say, you know what? Online education is kind of the way that I want to do it. I can travel with my parents. Mm-hmm. We actually have some kids that are visiting grandparents out of the United States that will be enrolled in Hub Schools on our online system.
It's amazing.
And so you think about that, and we are such a mobile society. Mm-hmm. If you are a parent and you say, gosh, I loved Hub Schools, I want, you know, Hub Schools, I was an Eagle. I want my kids have graduated as an Eagle, but I've got a job that takes me to Tupelo, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. They can still get a diploma from Hubs High School through our online school. And so I think that gives us some opportunities with it. Who knows, if we continue to grow, you may not need as much brick and mortar buildings because you're able to offer that up. So those are some opportunities that I think that we've got to embrace with that. But it's going to be some growing pains to get there.
And everybody will have to figure out for themselves and their situation what works and what doesn't. Because as you identified, there are some people that this is going to be a struggle. No matter how determined the kid may be, or how much we provide for them. Even we look at me now, I'm all on your staff, it looks like. But no matter what's provided to them, it's still just maybe a struggle, just the nature of the situation for them. So it's all going to play itself out. Ultimately, no matter when, because I'm going to be determined that at some point we are all going to have kids and teachers back in the same place. Those yep. who want to, maybe with some changes that are optional, but in general, the big picture. The good news is that, as you said, we probably will never have what we think of as normal again, but there are some positives that can come from that.
Sure.
I love that you have that perspective, and I'm sure that you're translating that through your culture. Are you afraid for, just in general, the education outcome? And what I mean by that is, I've heard this, so forgive me because it's just, you know, the chatter out there in the world, but that our kids are just not going to be able to catch up. Is that something that as educators y'all fear, that whether it's the 2.5 months last year, which we all recognize was not ideal, whether it's whatever this, and probably because it's constantly changing, not even because you don't have a good plan, but because the plan is constantly changing. But do you feel like there is going to be an opportunity to get back on track for those kids, especially some who are maybe in the later years of their educational life of primary schools? Or is it something that we're just going to all, now the whole world's just going to be kind of offset and it's okay? Because I've heard both.
Right. It's going to be interesting. I do believe if we don't take action, we will create a wider gap than already exists between the haves and have-nots. Again, we can't go backwards to what we were. We have to look differently. Now, Hobbs Schools actually adopted an additional 10 days to our calendar. That's why we started so early this year. And that 10 days was to decrease or to have an impact on the loss of instruction that we had from the spring.
Okay.
Because the reality of the spring was only to get us to May. That's
right.
Really all it was. It was such a bombshell on us. It was just, let's get kids graduated. Let's, you know, make sure that kids get their credits. And then let's reboot.
Absolutely.
And so we did that. Now we have to think differently, and we've got to say, okay, this may be the world we're in for a while. How are we going to, you know, improve education? So the state of New Mexico allowed districts to opt in or out of additional 10 days to their calendar. So instead of 178 academic days, we're going 188 academic days.
Okay.
Now Hobbs will have to make that determination every year, whether they want to do that. But by doing that, you hope that you can decrease that gap and get these kids back caught up, because, you know, over a few years, I mean, that, you know,
right.
that's
that could
in
be
2 years, that's a month,
okay.
Month of education.
Because that was my next question. Does 10 days for some of us doesn't seem like a whole lot, but in the world y'all work in, each day counts as a significant amount
right.
of time to make an impact. So 10 and then add it on. Again, those kids who are maybe later in their schooling, it's a different ratio.
Right.
But for these young kids, which actually, those are the kids who are at the most crucial time, correct?
Absolutely. You okay. know, and that's why there is a lot of research out there. And again, that's why the plan is not to bring back your secondary kids in the beginning, because they do a better job of online learning. You cannot teach reading to a kindergartner online. And I was very adamant to parents, and I strongly believe this, I don't think online learning is a good solution K-3. We had to offer that just because of the safety and because people's emotional mm-hmm. being of where they are. So we did offer that up to them, but it is not a good solution for a K-3 process. 4-12, you can make it work. And I'm going to tell you, there's some kids that it works well. I would not be one of those.
Right.
I am not a good online learner. Mm-hmm. I've had a couple of classes and did not do well on that. So that would not be a good solution for TJ Parks.
Right.
It is a great solution
for some
people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you've got to know what works and what doesn't work for you.
Right. Last, maybe not the last. We can talk about whatever else you want. Last thing I have in my head as of right this second, the infamous mask discussion. So masks are part of what is, again, being given as your guidance to what you have to do from the state. And I know this has been a very large topic. And I know some people, some families are making their decision about which choice they choose, which one of your options they choose, almost solely based on that. I know y'all have had a lot of discussions about this. I know you've talked to a lot of families about this. What is your overall desire to share about the masks?
Well, I need to walk around town with a couple of feathers out of my mouth because I have to eat a lot of crow.
Okay.
Because whenever the very first regulations or guidance documents came out from the State Department, it was recommended. Mm-hmm. And my comment to, we had committees all over, mm-hmm. and I met with all of these parents and all of these people, and I said, you know, mask may be a great thing, but I will not punish a child. I will not deny them their education because of a mask. The latest regulations that we got literally said that we, in order for us to receive our funding through the state of New Mexico, if we violated that order, then we would be shut down.
You really shouldn't have to eat the crow. Somebody else should, well, because that's not really fair to you.
To that point that my license could be taken, and Hobbs Schools would not get their state funding
and
from
honestly,
that.
Without the funding, you can't pay the teachers, you can't pay the light bills. I mean, I want to make sure, because we are, you and I mentioned this before we got on air, that we are proud of Lee County. We are fighters. We stand up for what we believe. There are there's a huge push for us to make sure that we're maintaining our liberties, blah, 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 blah. This, though, is not one of those things that even TJ Parks, no matter what you believed, could say, you know what, we're going to do this because this is so much bigger than your thoughts or your desires. And we have to be very rational in thinking about why we are following what's being given.
I've had two different friends of mine, superintendents, and literally opposite ends of the state that have been threatened with million-dollar fines because they were not following the guidelines of the Department of Health. And again, the Hobbs, New Mexico should not pay for my belief. Even though maybe the majority of the community believes that, we still should not have a financial burden because of something that I pull. So we're going to do what's best for our kids and try to provide the greatest opportunity. And again, if parents that's just a real sticking point, we do have the online opportunity for them. Hopefully, you know, again, there's so much research out there. You can find anything that you want to believe. I've got friends in Texas that have said, you know, that a mask K-3 is recommended. It's not mandated, but for 4-12, it is mandated. And so people are all over the place on this, and there's just no consistency anywhere. Like you said, Florida, mm-hmm. I mean, you've seen pictures of that school in Georgia, and they didn't have a single mask on. The halls were crowded.
Yeah, it looked like a normal day at Hobbs High to me.
I don't think that was a good choice by the leaders of that community. Right. I think you need to, you know, have a little common sense about you.
Well, now, of course, they're being used as poster children of what not to do and how the effects. And that was actually the school that supposedly now they've all had to go into quarantine because there was positives, which made me just think what, and I'm not sure that any of us really know what our end goal is to get our kids educated.
Exactly.
But there are, I just think, oh my goodness, what is it that we're trying to accomplish? Healthy and safe. But those are all very moving parts. And again, it depends on who you are and what you're thinking. Has there been something issued to answer that question as what we're trying to accomplish from a health perspective?
I don't think that there's an end game
as
far as, you know, a document saying this is what we want to accomplish. You know, whenever they look at whether a school or anybody is going to open up, they call it a gating process.
Okay, and there's five
criteria. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I will tell you, in our August board meeting, we are going to we will have a resolution in front of the board to ask the State Department to localize that gating to us, because right now they're using the state data mm-hmm. on that, mm-hmm. and we know that they have at least countywide data, and I believe that they have zip code type data. So let's get down to, you know, what should Hobbs, New Mexico, you know, how should we be rated? Mm-hmm. Don't compare us with Albuquerque or Farmington or poor Dabaca County. Do not have one single positive case,
and
they're treated just like the rest of us.
McKinley County or one of those that have literally couldn't be from the farthest ends of the spectrum of results, but yet they're now having to be in the same boat.
So we're Las Cruces was actually the school district who created this resolution, and many of us are asking our boards to
Makes
for
good
approval,
sense.
So we can send it to Santa Fe and say, listen, we know you have the ability. Give us that data and let us make some local decisions. And I think that's what I know the 89 superintendents that we meet twice a week on that.
Oh, is that right?
We want local autonomy because we have elected officials. Hobbs, New Mexico elects five officials that sit on our school board. They should be able to say, this is the response from Hobbs Schools. Remember I said we had 70% of our parents wanted to come back face to face. I think they should have that opportunity to be able to do that. And if you have the other 30% that want to go online, I think that's a phenomenal option. I absolutely 100% agree with that. But why should we hold back those 70% who now they can't go to work? We're killing the economy. But if that's what they want to do, let's give them that opportunity to be able to do that. So, and again, I think the other part of that is we have to ensure that the environment is safe. So those teachers that come back, that they're in a safe environment. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that, you know, what the parameters look on that. We've spent a lot of time and energy working with that. But we do have a couple of teachers that have some underlying health conditions that we have put them in charge of some of the online school. So I think if you look at our staff and you walk, you drive around Hobbs Schools right now, you see a lot of cars around there because teachers are back in the buildings.
And they want to be there.
Right. Mm-hmm. Even though there is a directive from the governor that we can't mandate that those teachers be at work today. If the rule is, if they can work from home and do their job from home, we allow them to do that. And we've been very adamant, sent lots of emails. But those teachers, I'm going to tell you, they are troopers. They work their tails off. They want kids. They want to be in that classroom. And so they're up there working for that.
That was going to be my next question. Nationally, I know that you can see, again, whatever you want to watch on mainstream media and how that is depicted there versus what I read a lot in personal posts that I see. But this idea that the teaching community, and I'm not going to say, I know it could probably be divided up between actual teachers and labor unions talking on behalf of teachers, whichever, however it works. Do you believe that the majority of your teachers that work for Hobbs Schools are literally the ones wanting to be in the classroom, unless they have those underlying health conditions or maybe they have some real concerns about their own family members? I get that there are definitely instances that that may not apply, but as a general broad brush statement, the majority of your teachers really wish that y'all were back in the classroom.
The vast majority. And we, again, we did surveys of staff to two different surveys, and they did. Now, I'm not going to say they just want to go back just whole hog, because they all have
cautious.
Some concerns. You know, I mean, they're nervous about that, whether they wear masks, whether they're are they going to be safe. And again, I think there's been some really good plans out there by districts. I believe it's Ector County is doing it by stages. They're bringing kids in levels at a time, so they're not just flooding their buildings, so they have a little bit more control over that. I think those are good methods of looking at. But again, I wish we had a little more local control over that. We don't as of right now, those are the rules that we've got. And so we'll live within those rules and we'll move forward. But to answer your question, the vast majority, it was well over 65%. I take that back. It was in the 80s that our teachers wanted to come back. Again, there are some caveats to that they wanted to have some, make sure that we had the sanitization going on and things like that. But teachers want to be around kids. I mean, that's why they get into teaching, is they love kids. Right.
That's the passion, I think.
Exactly. And we have some phenomenal teachers in Hobbs Schools, and I appreciate the energy and the effort. And they have spent a lot of time this summer on trainings and getting ready for kids. And again, if you drive around the schools, even though kids aren't there, those teachers are there working. And I just appreciate all the effort that they've done.
Well, I know classrooms are ready. I've seen posts from teacher friends where they got their classroom ready. You can tell that they're all sad for their kids, it seems.
Right.
There is just such an underlying sense of almost helplessness, I think, for us all in all facets of life, but especially when we start talking about school and our kids.
You know, it's hard to imagine this, but, you know, we hired about 60 new teachers this year. And some of those are brand new teachers. I mean, they're brand new out of college.
First year that they're supposed
they
to get.
Don't have a clue what this first year is. And you think, you know, you talk about the sadness of what everybody's had to go through, mm-hmm. but you're talking about somebody who's starting a brand new profession, and the profession is different than anything they've ever been or seen before. They didn't attend school like this.
No.
You know, their
can't
teacher
have no experience to draw of.
Teacher friend next door to them mm-hmm. doesn't know how to help them. And so it's really interesting as we mm-hmm. look at that.
Last thing I'll introduce as a kind of a wrap up for you, and that is obviously you are waiting day by day to see what happens, what comes down. If all of the superintendents were to, it didn't sound like you thought all of the school districts, but a large group of them seem to maybe be taking the lead off of this document and this resolution and trying to send it up and say, you know, really let us have a little bit more control. Is there any hope, faith, belief that movement has any ground? And I know the commission has done several similar things. I think the city did a resolution. I don't think that the public feels like, even though that they did these resolutions, that anything came of that. I guess my question, I know you don't have a magic ball, but do you feel like there's maybe more momentum from the school districts doing this than maybe we've seen in some of the past resolutions going up to Santa Fe?
I don't think it has a great opportunity. And I think the gist of it is Dr. Scracie has made the comment that the reason that we look at it from a statewide model is because we are such a mobile society. So if he made the comment one time that if you could guarantee me that Lee County, that no one from Lee County would drive anywhere else in the state, then we would treat Lee County differently. So with that being said, I don't know that they're going to listen to this, but if there's just an inkling of us doing it, I think it's worth us sending it up there. And all of our legislators and legislators across the state, and I've made presentations to Legislative Finance Committee and Cloudcroft this summer and online and Legislative Education Study Committee, all of those legislators agreed that there needs to be more local control mm-hmm. Because they're hearing it from people
Absolutely.
Back home. Now there needs to be some guidance from the state because we don't have, you know, some of the resources they have, but I do think there needs to be some local control. But if we had some guidance, again, I don't know what that, we certainly wouldn't come back full bore.
Right.
There's no doubt about that. Right. But we do have some kids in our buildings right now mm-hmm. because we have our D-level special ed. We have our autistic kids and our medically fragile, some of those kids who really need us and we need them. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad to have them back.
Absolutely.
But there's a lot more kids that we'd love to have back just because it's good for them mentally, psychologically, emotionally, educationally. It's good for them, but it's good for adults as well. And, you know, you think about it, it's been 5 months since those kids have been in school. And so you worry about some of the routines that they're creating. And so those routines are going to have to be changed.
Right.
And again, if what we're trying to do is prepare kids for the real world, you can't stay at home in your pajamas all day long looking
right.
at a computer. Not everyone can. Now, some people can. They're
right.
fortunate to be able to do that. But
that isn't necessarily the majority of people's options, though.
The majority right? of us have to get up and go into an office or go to work someday or every day. And are we preparing them to be successful in that mode? So, again, I think you've got the great question is, what is the end game from this? And
right.
I think as a state and as a nation, we've got to figure out, you know, the risk reward of this. And I, that's why I'm in Hobbs, New Mexico, and not somewhere else. So.
Well, here's what I think that is absolutely important to say, which is to all of the education system, and I'm going to include your students, their families, just the ability to try to come together.
Right.
All of the administration, all taking your leads as you've been given them, and then flushing it through that information, passing it out, giving people options, collecting it back, creating something out of that. This is probably going to end up being one of the most difficult portions of the fallout of this whole thing. And I will say that I I never wanted to be in your shoes to begin with. Those are really big shoes in a lot of ways. I didn't want to be in them. I certainly do not envy the position that y'all have been put in, but I am so proud to have seen what has come out of it and to see families taking the as positive of an option of a person, no, of an attitude
right.
as they can in these first few days and trying to pass it off to their kids as we're going to make the best of it,
right.
which is kind of the mentality that I think they have probably gotten from the culture they've been receiving in your school system for these years. So I commend everyone on all that they've been able to do. And I just want to say that I think you have a community behind you. Right. And I do feel like there has been lots of great positive support. But regardless of what we think, you're the one who has the job at the end of the day, you and your staff, to make something happen. And I think y'all have done the very best with what you have.
Well, thanks. And we are fortunate to be in Hobbs, New Mexico, and in southeastern New Mexico, where the mentality is, you know, we're not reliant on the government. We're not reliant on anybody. We're independent, and you know, you either become a victim or you take charge. And I think we're ready to take charge. We're ready to move forward, and let's, you know, we don't want to be victims. We
right.
don't want to sit and whine about this thing. Let's step up. You know, we pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, as they say, and let's take the move and let's go on. But the community has been very supportive of what we've done. It's been difficult, and I feel for parents. I feel for kids. But I really think whenever it's all said and done, when we look back on this, we're going to see some really positive things that will come from this. It's going to be a grind for a while,
yeah.
Because there's some things we don't even know that we've missed, and I guarantee we've missed a few things. But we're going to do what's best for kids, number one, and we're going to take care of kids and take care of families, and we're going to be better for it in the end. Hobbs is a great place, and we're going to be okay.
And we're proud to be Eagles.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. TJ Parks, it's been such a pleasure, sir. And I know that this is not probably the interview that you were just super excited about, but at the same time, you're the one who reached out to me because I know you know the importance of communicating. Anything else that you'd like to say before we go, or have we covered all of the main things you wanted to get across?
No, I just want to express my appreciation to this community for their support and their guidance, and they've really helped us move through this. We couldn't get to where we were if we were battling with the community, and so they've been supportive. We've had lots of committees, and they've had great input, and people have said this will work, this won't work, and I just appreciate everybody's support through this.
And really finding the beauty of it all, of those collaborations, of the cohesiveness of the whole crew. As I mentioned, I look at it kind of as 12,000 people plus the ancillary family
right.
Units. That's a lot of people to try to get to all work in the same direction, and y'all have done a great job in such trying times. So
thanks.
I appreciate all you're doing for us. And folks, that does it for today's show. Again, tons of good information there. Please make sure that you share that this is on, that so that other people can hear it and maybe help clarify anything that may be out there unknown to them, or just hear the sense of I think confidence and passion and belief that everything is being done in the best way it can with the circumstances that you have. So again, thanks to TJ as well as you for listening right here on KNMJ 100.9 FM to the Lee County with Lindsay Show. I'm Lindsay Chisholm-McCarter. Have a great week, my friends.